This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and it's Fun Friday. Or it used to be. We've had a few good weeks. Culture Pop's Matt Armitage has been channeling the spirit of summer. Maybe they were changing his medication. Who knows? But with all that optimism, it has come to an end. He's grumpy yet again. So, Matt, who sold your Macintosh this week, Matt?
Hey, Jeff, thank you for the Apple segue. Although today's show isn't about Apple, or it kind of is, but not specifically. And actually, I was quite surprised with the iPhone X. It was a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. But we're not going to go into that. We'll discuss that more in Geeks. Yeah. Otherwise, we won't be able to pad all of this out into an hour. So right now, I want to play you a clip.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated? Good night.
Now, that was Johnny Rotten from the Sex Pistols. That was from their final show in San Francisco in 1978. And that's what today is about, that nagging feeling that we're somehow being cheated by the tech companies.
Oh, so tech companies are cheating us?
Now, I have to be very careful here, not in the sense that we're being defrauded, although the exhaust emission scandal of the last couple of years, which dragged in a lot of car companies, did show how technology could be used to cheat and evade government regulations. And we do know that some tech companies have built so-called grey sub-programs into their apps that they could use against their customers. Again, we're not going to name anyone here, but you know who you are, rideshare app. We get what we pay for. We get what we pay for when we buy this technology, but we don't get as much as the technology companies have to give.
Would you like to explain it in a very less cryptic manner?
Okay, I don't know how many people heard me on the Evening Edition on Tuesday doing the Top 5 at 5.
The Tesla story.
Yes, exactly. Thanks for listening, Jeff. Would you like a BFM car sticker? No, the story is that during Hurricane Irma last week, Tesla announced that it would temporarily unlock the batteries on some users' cars to extend the range of the cars.
Yeah.
So the idea was that the cars would be able to go further on a single charge, and that would allow the car owners to get themselves and their families away from the storm and out of harm's way. Now, that unlock is set to expire on the 16th of September, and then the batteries go back to their normal capacity.
And it sounds like a perfectly good thing. So why are you grumpy that you don't want people to flee the storm, man?
Well, no, it's a great thing in and of itself. You know, it's an example of a tech company thinking about the well-being of its customers. And don't forget, these are people who have already spent their money with the company. So it's a great piece of after-sales service. I'm not so cynical that I think it's been done simply for, you know, PR reasons. It might be a disaster plan that the company has on ice, you know, ready to mobilize when needed. Or it simply could have been a techie going to his or her boss and saying, hey, you know, we can help these people. I think it's a really cool gesture, and I'm certainly not criticizing Tesla for what they did.
So who are you criticizing then, man?
Well, I'm criticizing the fact that they could actually extend the capacity of their customers. A lot of listeners will already know this, but I'll explain it for those that don't. The majority of people who own the Tesla Model S and the Model X, they bought it with a large 75 kilowatt capacity battery. Now, Tesla also made a cheaper version of the cars available with a lower capacity 60 kilowatt battery. Performance is pretty much the same, but it means you get a reduced range on the car. It doesn't go quite so far, which is obvious. You know, smaller battery, less charge, smaller range. Makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, so you buy your car according to your budget and your requirements. No-brainer.
Yes, of course. But we're kind of at a disadvantage here. As consumers, we have this bottom-to-top view of production. So we look at entry-level products, and we think that they are the cheapest ones that the company is going to make. So we pay more for models that go up the scale because As far as we're concerned, they have better components and they cost more to produce. Mm-hmm. Except that a lot of today's logistics chain savvy businesses are actually top to bottom producers.
And what does top to bottom mean in relation to Tesla then?
Well, the people who opted for a cheaper Tesla didn't get a smaller battery.
Ah.
They got the high capacity 75 kilowatt battery from the expensive car, but it has been electronically limited to only give them 60 kilowatts of storage and power output. So car heads are used to the phrase electronically limited.
Mm-hmm.
The speed of the car is electronically limited. Mm. It basically means that a piece of software on it or an electric control chip is used to govern the output or the performance of the part or the engine. So you have this weird situation where you pay less for the same thing, and because you're paying less, they let you use less of it. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense, but the key here is that it doesn't cost less to make. In fact, in some instances, they actually have to spend more money on it to make it work less well. They have to write a piece of software to limit the performance so that they can charge you less for it. Mm. That is a bizarre scenario where it costs more to make something that you buy for less money.
So companies are spending more money on something to make it work less as well as, you know, what you would get on the higher end so that it would cost you less.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you phrased it better than I did. So when Tesla made their gesture to unlock the battery and give customers access to the full capacity, a lot of people were really confused and upset to find out that the company was basically underclocking their cars. And also annoyed that a little piece of code downloaded is all that it takes to upgrade it. Because apparently some customers in the past who wanted to upgrade from the smaller to the larger capacity battery, they had to pay thousands of dollars for that same piece of code that they used to unlock the cars last week.
Mm.
So that is what you would call a completely arbitrary cost. And as a result, despite making this nice gesture to their customers, there's been like a huge backlash and an explosion of comments on social media.
Mm. Fun Friday. Matt is feeling cheated, and I guess that's his definition of Fun Friday. We'll see what else he has under his sleeves when we come back in just a moment. I'm hoping it's not just Tesla that's in trouble here. A lot more other companies, I guess, are in this boat. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United, BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Matt Armitage from Culture Pop. It's Fun Friday. Well, it's like a cheated Friday now. Now, Matt, as we were talking about this for the entire show today, can we just assume that it's not just Tesla engaging in this kind of behavior?
Exactly. It's actually really widespread through any industry that uses electronics, but it tends to be more visible in the car industry. So we said that phrase before the break, electronically limited.
Yep. Mm.
Again, petrol heads know this, but maybe the wider public doesn't. A lot of car makers reuse the same engine across a number of models in their range. The reason is, you know, it's really simple. If you've got 10 different variants, you don't want to have to manufacture 10 different
engines.
Complicated. Very complicated, very expensive. Firstly, you know, you don't know what the demand would be. So you could have like a fantastic car that's selling really well, but you could have one unpopular variant just because people don't want that output option.
Yeah.
And that could potentially wipe out the profit from the successful models. So you don't want to do that. From a supply point of view, one variant controlled by software makes most sense. But that makes pricing a little bit arbitrary because there's no cost differential to different versions of that same engine.
Mm.
So if you get like a prestige car manufacturer, you might have a gap of $150,000 between the base level model and the highest capacity or tuned model.
Mm.
But it's all the same engine.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the same parts. So, you know, economically, the companies could give you the best engine and still make a profit. But we have this perception that more power means more expensive.
Mm. And can you explain the logic behind this?
Well, again, it's not just with the auto industry, it is across the board. This convergence of software and hardware means a lot of our consumer goods can be just one thing dressed up as a lot of different versions of the same thing, all with different prices and all with software governing the functionality. At the same time, we have production becoming more and more efficient. The technology behind it is making production cheaper. And things are getting a lot more powerful at the same time. So technology is propelling us towards the magical point of zero marginal cost. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it on the show before. It's something I think that comes up quite often on enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the holy grail and the curse of modern business. It's the holy grail because it means making an extra car or hairdryer or our favorite, the talking toaster. It doesn't cost the manufacturer a penny. That additional unit is just pure profit. But it's also the curse because unless the company can manipulate our expectations, the product no longer has any perceived value. We know that it doesn't cost anything to make an additional one.
Yeah.
So in the zero marginal cost world, a rival could charge you ₱1 for the equivalent of a Rolls Royce, and they would still make ₱1 profit. Mm. So that completely upends the what we think about the way our economic system actually functions.
Now, you laid out a very simple example. Being charged different amounts of money for the same engine. It's not that simple, though, is it?
No, of course. I mean, when you increase the output of an engine, gear ratios have to change. You might need to upgrade other components like, you know, brakes, suspension, clutch. Otherwise, you're going to drive it into the nearest wall rather than actually making it around the corner. You know, you'll have a car that's so powerful that it simply flies into the nearest static object.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the more expensive version of the car may come with nicer seats, more gizmos. Mm. You might get an air-conditioned eyebrow comb. You might get in-pedal foot massengers. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if you're a petrol head or a geek, when you talk about a car, it's about horses, right?
Yeah.
All that other stuff is just weight that slows the car down. Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine I won't name has a car that I won't identify that by a car maker I won't talk about.
All right.
Because I can't. He went to an aftermarket chip supplier who replaced the ECU in his engine.
Mm.
And instantly his car was uprated by 25%. From 200 brake horsepower to 250 brake horsepower.
That's what I did to my previous car as well.
Exactly, yeah. Because it's a 250 horsepower engine.
Mm.
He only has access to 200 horses under his original manufacturer's warranty.
Mm.
And that same engine is found in cars that have an output of even less than that. It's in plenty of cars that have an output of around 130 horsepower.
Yeah. Mm.
And the chip he bought cost only $500, about 2,000 ringgit. Now, a version of his car with 250 brake horsepower costs around 70,000 ringgit more.
Wow.
So you can see what the difference here is, and a lot of that money is going in pure profit to the manufacturer.
Now, you said this is common across industries. It's just that we can see it more clearly in cars?
Sure. Another good example that's accessible for most people is printers.
Uh-huh.
So often when you look at a bunch of printers by the same manufacturer, they look very, very similar.
Oh, God, yeah.
They might be slightly different tones. They might have one extra button, but pretty much they're the same. They're the same shape. Their functionality is pretty similar. What differentiates them is performance. That you'll see a little sign saying there's a different cost per page.
Yeah.
They'll have a different print speed per minute, and they'll have a different level of ink efficiency. Thing is, in a lot of cases, that entry-level printer is identical to the range-topping doppelganger. And they all cost exactly the same amount of money to make. It's just that if you want to pay less for a printer, if you want a budget printer, they'll sell it to you with a chip in that makes it less good. They'll cap the pages per minute. They'll make it less efficient at printing with ink so that your cost per page goes up. Completely arbitrary.
But why does any of this matter?
Because we don't want things that are less good. We want the best things that we can get for our money. Mm. So it seems really unfair to manipulate these products to give us less than the best that they can. If you're paying budget prices for the flagship model, you know, the only reason the price difference exists is to boost profits. And that's why when people found out that Tesla could make the cars better by pressing a button remotely, it made them very angry.
Yeah.
Because when people find out things like this, they do feel cheated.
Especially those who buy the full high-range model and you go like, what?
Well, you know, like I said, the whole thing becomes arbitrary. You don't need these differences between the model.
Okay.
Because the cost is the same. Yeah. The cost to make the high-end model is the same as producing the budget model. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's all completely arbitrary. Mm. And I can see it from the manufacturer's point of view. Something like printers are a very high volume, but they're a low margin business. You know, TVs we know are the same, and handphones as well, except for maybe Apple. You know, that product diffusion can be the difference between barely breaking even and making a healthy profit. But I don't accept that this is either the best or the right way to do it.
Mm.
You know, in old school economics, there are terms called normal and abnormal profits. And this kind of business model seems to be very, very abnormal.
Mm. And you've spent the last few weeks talking about how good technology is.
And perverse as it sounds, these distortions are actually an example of how good the technology is. It's so good that companies have to find these weird and convoluted ways to justify making us pay more for it. Thing is, you know, one of the things we always champion here on Tech Talk is that technology should be something that enables you.
Mm.
It's supposed to make your life better. So where we get to the point where we're talking about limiting devices, limiting hardware, using software, then you know something is wrong with the whole system.
Mm. What about the whole upgrade cycle then?
I mean, that's another sticking point. And this one is kind of less easy to prove.
Yeah.
With the examples before, they're kind of overt, and we know it from the supply chain and the logistics of what happens. But we have this sneaking feeling that companies are kind of rationing and drip-feeding the innovation that we see in the products we buy. So, for example, is there any major reason that the iPhone X couldn't have been last year's iPhone 7? Or the same with the latest Samsung Galaxy? It doesn't matter what company or device you choose.
Yeah.
Are any of these devices such a leap forward in technology that we couldn't have seen them last year? You know, I don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not that kind of technology expert. I don't have that information on the internal workings of the
devices. It would all just come down to like the supply chain would have a problem in demand, you know, creating that demand and all that.
Yeah, precisely.
But
I don't think technology-wise, I don't think there's anything there. I don't, you know, there's no huge leaps in the processors or any of this kind of thing. But remember when people used to say back in the 80s and 90s that the tech leaders of the time, like Sony, companies like that, had 30 years worth of product innovation stacked up and waiting to release? There were always these kind of innovations. You could go into a secret lab at Sony or Panasonic or Technics or whatever and see, like, you know, the next three generations worth of technology hidden away. And of course that was nonsense.
Yeah.
But when you look at the innovation in that period, you know, you had VHS going to Laserdisc, going to DVD to Blu-ray, or you had vinyl going to CD to mini disc to MP3 to streaming. You know, all of those are giant leaps in either usability and quality. But last year, you know, if you look at all the phones that came out last year, they were phones with a smaller bezel.
Yeah.
And this year, we've got phones with no bezel. You know, it's like this constant drip feed that delivers these kind of minor improvements in usability and quality, but prompts us to upgrade as kind of often as possible.
Yeah. And if last year's device works so well, can't we just ignore the calls for upgrade?
And that's where the software is being used against us.
Uh-huh.
Again, now I've got a couple of older iPads, by which I mean about 2 years old, and I was playing with them last night, which was the first time in a while, and I realized how slow and laggy they were.
Yeah, mine does that too.
On the, you know, running the latest version of the OS.
Horrible.
But the devices themselves actually work fine. They used to be really zippy, but we're not allowed to leave the software as it is. You have to upgrade because older versions of the OS are not updated with security patches, or you get messages saying that apps you need for work or productivity, or just because it's your favorite app, will no longer be updated and will soon cease working. One example, the BBC's iPlayer radio app regularly stops working if you don't update to the latest version.
Wow.
Even if your OS is up to date,
it will
tell you this version will stop working and give you the date that it will stop. So you have to keep updating these things. So you have these fantastic devices that are being rendered unusable and virtually obsolete. And they're so locked down, you can't even get a nerd to put Linux on them and donate them to charity. So why is it acceptable to render these things useless? I really don't think the tech companies have begun to imagine this kind of tsunami of ill will and resentment that they're causing, because ultimately I think it's going to destroy their business and their company.
You know, my iPad Mini 2 with the Retina display, it looks brand new. Hardware-wise, it's wow, it's shiny, it's in a case. I took it out and just gave it a bit of a clean. Wow, it looks brand new.
Looks
like it came up from the store.
Yeah, and that's one of the devices I was using. I've got one of those as well.
Yeah,
but it's
beautiful
really
device, but
beautiful,
I can't slow. It's so slow.
It's slow, and there's no reason for it. If they just allow it to stay on the previous version of the operating system,
I would still use it. Yeah.
It would be fine. Yeah.
I think even chips like your processor chips as well, you can overclock them. And you know, I used to do it as a gamer when I was in high school. I used to overclock my processor because it could do it. It was just a simple code that you just got to do.
Yeah.
And
I mean, you sometimes had to upgrade the cooling because it would.
It's just overheating,
you're not doing anything that the processor can't handle.
Yeah. So we always end the shows the same way as we always do. What can we do, Matt?
Okay, I don't know if anyone else has used this word, so apologies to everyone if I'm not actually the inventor here. We're basically being outgraded. It's not about upgrades, it's about outgrades. You know, there's a system here that's designed to push us towards replacement or version of the things that we buy are less good than they should be. And I think it's okay if you're out there and you feel outraged. Fanboys like us are, you know, oh, great, awesome, I'll sell my kidney and I'll buy a new note. I don't care. You know, someone's going to invent a robot kidney before I get sick. But the tech companies forget that for real people, buying a phone because its software has rendered it useless means that there's something else that they don't buy. It means not repairing the car that month. It means getting behind with school fees or equipment for kids or not taking a holiday this year. There are real-world consequences to this endless cycle of chasing and obsolescence. I think Apple CEO Tim Cook gave an interview to Fortune magazine this week where he said Apple's products aren't just for the rich. Now, I haven't read the interview. I've only read the articles that reference it, so I don't want to misquote him. But that really is an example of how out of touch our global business leaders are. Not just Tim Cook, but Silicon Valley and the electronics industry in particular. On the surface, it's true what Tim Cook says. You don't need to be a millionaire to buy an iPhone if being a millionaire is your definition of rich.
Yeah.
But where's Apple's equivalent of the one laptop per child program? With all the money and the expertise they have, why not use some of their profits to design an ultra-robust budget smartphone that could transform the lives of people in developing countries? You know, connect them, give them knowledge, because knowledge and opportunity offer direct ways for people to get out of poverty. And again, when I say Apple, I'm talking about all of the companies. It could be Samsung or Huawei or Microsoft, any of them. The system isn't working at the moment. You know, we hear that term consumer loyalty, customer loyalty being used all the time. And I'm telling you, once we get to that level of zero marginal cost, these companies are very fast going to discover that their consumers will happily put them out of business. And that's the price of the kind of loyalty our current system is creating. You know, we have a model of capitalism that reflects an old disappearing world. We need a new economic system that reflects the kind of world and the kind of production systems that we have now. Because right now, these enormous companies are creating and perpetuating a lot of problems, and they're not looking for the solutions.
Matt Armitage from Culture Pop, feeling cheated. And you know what? I actually feel the same way too now.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
I feel cheated now.
Yeah, I just got more and more annoyed as I was researching this topic. I was just like, Gosh.
Yeah. Well,
anyway,
we'll be
happier after the break.
Yeah, well, technically we will slightly, I guess, I hope. We'll be right back with the Geek Squawks after this. Fun Friday indeed. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.